Hello and welcome to the Sweep Podcast with me, Mitchell Willis, and him, Michael Hall.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm struggling, Mitch, I'll be honest. It's been quite a long weekend, and I know that we've had almost a fortnight off, but it feels like I've just run 15 marathons while consuming 15 pints. That's the kind of level that I'm at the moment. What about you?
I feel like I've done 16 with 16, if I'm honest with you. Yeah, it's every weekend for both of us, wasn't it?
It was.
And, as much as you say it's been a welcome break, I do feel worse than I've felt for a long, long time. So there is a lot to cover.
We picked the worst time to do the longest pod of our career so far, haven't we? Let's go for a podcast the Monday morning after a stag do.
Yes.
That's a good idea.
So much football, though, over the last couple of weeks. Starting with the FA Cup, which we'll talk about later. Some giant killings of sorts. Plenty of talking points. Then there's also been a couple of rounds of Premier League and Championship to dissect. Interestingly, in top flight, only two clubs have won both of their games out of the 20 clubs in the league. So it shows how much has been going on there. Naturally, it's thrown up some narrative at both ends of the table. But it's the top where we're going to start, and the race for the title between current leaders and tail-chasing Manchester City, which is where we're going to first.
Absolutely. And I think that it's fair to say that they've had a bit of a mixed week, isn't it? You looked at how they started against Newcastle, I think it was Tuesday night, and you thought it was going to be plain sailing. They were playing against a side who were down there for a reason, had really struggled for form, and there was only really one result that you would imagine would have come out of that game, especially after the early goal in that one.
And it did not pan out that way.
It didn't, did it? No. And I think you've got to give credit to Newcastle, really. They fought very hard through that game, and they didn't particularly threaten too often, and it was more the fact that defensively City were pretty poor, weren't they, and really allowed Newcastle back into it.
They were arguably a little too confident as well, which, you know, Pep Guardiola wants his sides to be, and he wants them to go and express themselves and play football out from the back as well. And I think, you know, naturally, if you take a risk every now and again, you're going to get caught out, and I think it was Newcastle's day from that perspective. You know, Rondon's got in there as well, and he's, you know, he's a handful regardless of whether he's kind of got the ball or not got the ball, and he makes you think about what's going on. And I think that was the problem for them. They maybe did get that air of confidence from that first minute goal, and then it may have just been a little too easy for them at times, and then they got caught out.
I think that a lot of responsibility for the defensive lack of organisation really has to sit with John Stones, somebody who is an experienced defender. We've all sung his praises for a long time now, but he's just looked really shaky this season, and I don't know whether that's the fact that he's not guaranteed a starting place every week, because you look back at that Guardiola side of last season, and he was always the first name on the team sheet in terms of the defenders. And Americk Laporte's obviously taken that mantle up this season, and he seems to be playing every week, and Stones is in and out of the team. And I don't know, do you think it's the lack of consistent minutes that's causing him to have these lapses, or do you think it's just something that he's always had in his game? Because when that ball goes up in the air, just clear it.
Yeah.
Don't wait for Rondon to get in there and score. Just go and be decisive. If you've got to clear one of your men out, go and do so, but it's not the sort of defending that I'd expect from someone like Stones.
No, I think you're right, and I think ultimately he has always had that in the locker, and you know that's where the criticism's come from previously, and I think it's probably highlighted that little bit more in the sense that Laporte has done very well. They've got the quality to replace him. And I think for John Stones, unfortunately, he does thrive from playing football every week and playing every minute. And, you know, he does look very much a confidence player, and as a player who does play with confidence, if that makes sense as well. So I think, you know, from that perspective, you have to look at the fact that he's probably had these opportunities, and they've found someone who's just a little bit more consistent and solid. And I think, you know, naturally we've seen over the last month or so that Manchester City have kind of got themselves back up and running. They're, you know, destroying teams with very little to do at the back as well. And I think Stones, you know, he's very good with the ball at his feet, but equally that's arguably his downfall as well. And I think, you know, now they're looking at it thinking, let's just keep the clean sheets and build on that. We don't necessarily need you to go and do something that we've got enough players on the team to go and do.
Yeah, and we obviously saw from that performance on Wednesday, he was quite rightly dropped for the game against Arsenal on Sunday, and Laporte was pushed to left back, and Fernandinho went to centre half when they were defending, but actually played defensive midfield when they were attacking. And it's something that we've seen Guardiola do in the past, but I don't think anyone necessarily expected that to happen on Sunday. I think that the fact that he had Fabian Delph on the bench, and he also had John Stones there, he definitely had enough defensive cover to be able to put somebody at left back, keep the shape as it was. But it worked quite nicely with Fernandinho, because he's got that ability to get up and down the pitch really quickly. And he just seems as comfortable in that position as he does going forward. That said, Arsenal didn't really do enough to test them, did they?
No, they didn't. You know, it was an odd one. Aguero scored in the first minute again, and you thought, is that the inevitability that we're expecting, or is it going to be the same again? And, you know, Arsenal, to their credit, you know, they've generally performed quite well against the big teams this season, and to get themselves back into it quite quick, you thought, you know, there could be a game on here. But I think, you know, the goal just before half-time swung it, and Manchester City did look dominant, and could and probably should have added to the tally. I think if you look at the kind of 5s, 6s, 7s, 8s, and 9s that they've been scoring in recent weeks, it wouldn't have been a huge surprise, and I don't think it would have been massively unjustified either.
No, and that win now obviously means that City have closed the gap to Liverpool as they're playing tonight, and again it's the following day from City, and it's something that we've seen go to and fro so far in terms of when the teams have played, but this is the closest gap that we've seen for a little while.
Yeah.
And I think that it probably does put a little bit of added pressure onto Liverpool ahead of their game at West Ham tonight.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I heard Guardiola say that he just wants to be top. Like, there's no question mark for him. He does feel the pressure's on the team that are second, because you're in your own, you know, it's in your hands, isn't it? It's your own destiny. If you lose a game, you've got the chance to go 5 points behind or 8 points behind or wherever it's going to be. And, you know, they got lucky with Liverpool only drawing last week. And I think, you know, it didn't surprise me that Leicester could do that to them, because I think that's the side that Leicester are. You know, they will make it difficult for you. The conditions were difficult. And Liverpool have had their moments this season of not quite firing on all cylinders. And that was very much the case then. Weirdly, like Manchester City, they took an early lead. And it was a goal that kind of pulled it back for Leicester just before half-time. And I think from there, you go in at half-time, it's always psychologically difficult to take. But when you've got so much riding on it, you're top of the league and you really, really need to come back out and attack. They looked a shadow of their former selves in the second half last week, really.
I think that Leicester do deserve credit, you're right, because they've been able to go to the big sides this season and get results. But I think everyone expected Liverpool to just go ahead and win that game, especially after Manchester City dropping points the night before. And it's a weird one, because mentally they have been so strong this season. They've won the games that you maybe didn't expect them to win.
Yep.
The home game against Manchester City, where Mahrez misses the penalty, you think psychologically Liverpool are the ones who come out of that game with more to take from it, given what could have been. And it was a game where I naturally expected them to go and get the 3 points, and seeing them not do that will not only frustrate Liverpool fans, but it will give Manchester City that extra bit of confidence going into the games this weekend. And you kind of saw that come through yesterday, I thought. I think the psychological hurdle of them getting over that issue that they had in midweek, and it will be interesting to see how Liverpool do tonight, because if they do score early again against West Ham tonight, it's at that point, do they sit off a little bit? Do they allow West Ham back into the game, or do they just go for the throat, as we saw them do earlier on in the season? And the goals have dried up a little bit for Liverpool. I know that they've been a free scoring team so far this season, but you would expect them to do better at home. And I think that it's not necessarily the pressure that's being applied from City's point of view. It's maybe just the pressure of the fact that they've been top of the league for so long now, and
the expectation.
Yeah, the expectation of what comes with it. So I think tonight's a really intriguing game, because West Ham haven't been on a good run of late, and I think that if you'd have asked Liverpool for any team away from home, West Ham's probably one of the ones that they would have liked to avoid, because they can be a Jekyll and Hyde side. They can be incredibly good in certain performances, and then they can go two or three games without looking like they're likely to score, let alone threaten an opposition defence.
And then you've got Pellegrini as well, who said that he wants to get the win for Manchester City, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how he can G his players up for this game, because, on paper, Liverpool should be winning this, and they've got the most to lose. But as you say, West Ham, they can cause an upset. They love an upset. They love an upset under the lights. It's not quite Upton Park anymore, but that's the sort of thing the fans love. And they'll be about 20 metres away, but in the faces of the Liverpool players. And yeah, I think it's, as you say, it's an intriguing game. And you know, I think each week and round of fixtures now is just going to be very, very interesting. Whether one side's playing the bottom sides or whether they're playing top sides, I think there's a kind of storyline around each game now between Manchester City and Liverpool.
And we do this every couple of weeks when there seems to be a little bit of a swing, don't we, in the title race. We try and pinpoint who we think is going to win. Last time round we both said Manchester City. Is that still your opinion? Is it more so now, or have these results clouded that?
I think, you know, the game against Newcastle was almost a one-off, like a cup game type of affair, really. But you saw yesterday the quality that they've got, and also the strength and depth they've got as well. I do still think Liverpool are potentially two injuries away from being in trouble. You know, if they lost Salah for a period of time, that's huge for them. Whereas I think Manchester City could, but they've shown with De Bruyne this season, you know, this was first start at home last night. Ultimately, they've got at least two players for every single position. So I think from that perspective, along with the experience of having done it before, Guardiola's probably got that little bit more experience than Klopp in that situation as well. I think, you know, they should go on and win it, but it just wouldn't surprise me if it was either of them.
I think that this week is going to be massive, and I look at the fixtures coming up this weekend, and I think Liverpool are at home to Bournemouth or Fulham, and Manchester City are at home to Chelsea. And you look at that and you think, actually, if Liverpool do win tonight, and then Manchester City have got Everton midweek, so yep. If they were to drop points there, which, let's be honest, it's not an easy place to go, but if they were to drop points there, you can feasibly see them dropping points against Chelsea. Liverpool could find themselves nearly 10 points clear by the end of the week. And yep. I think if that was to happen, then that would be it. I don't think that City would be able to come back from that. You look at it another way, if Liverpool drop points tonight, City go to Everton and win on Saturday, and then the gap's non-existent. So it's intriguing. I'm still of the opinion that City are going to win it as well, but it's the great thing from a neutral's point of view is that it keeps going like this.
And
it's not like we've got one team far ahead like we had last season, and that's the downside of having a real quality side against 19 others in the Premier League, is that you do lose that element of competition. So to have that back this season is excellent.
Just while we're on West Ham, may as well stay there. And as you said, they are in a poor run of form out the FA Cup, which we'll get onto later. Currently sit 12th, and they physically and metaphorically managed to keep hold of Arnautovic, and we saw him effectively locked in a room.
Yeah.
And that's huge for them, but I think that really, really cements the fact that they need to be finishing at least in the top half this season.
Well, I think that they will attract more players given their status as a top half Premier League side.
Yep.
I think that if you play for a side outside the top six in Spain or Italy, or a league that's up and coming like the Bundesliga is, because I think the Bundesliga, and I people might wonder what I'm talking about when I say an up and coming league, but again, you look at the competition over in the Bundesliga this season, and you look at all the teams over there, and English players are wanting to go there, and naturally more players who currently play in that division will look to the English league to come and play their football over here. If you were playing in Germany, or if you were playing somewhere like that, and you looked at West Ham, you thought they're based in London, they've got a massive stadium, they've got a lot of ambition, they're clearly willing to pay high wages.
Yep.
They were linked with big targets during the transfer window, and they're able to keep hold of their players now, which is something they've not been able to do in the past. So I think it was a statement of intent, and I think that they will do well to hold on to him in the summer. I think there's a lot of talk of him going at that point. If they can keep him and Felipe Anderson there and bring in a striker, I know they were linked with a few strikers in the transfer window. There were bids of 50 million talked about, and if that's the sort of player that they're going to go after, then West Ham could quite easily find themselves in that race for the top sort of six or seven next season. I don't think they'll get anywhere near it this season, but if they can finish eighth or ninth, then it's much easier to attract a player than if you finish 15th or 16th.
You're absolutely right. Speaking of not attracting players, Tottenham Hotspur. you know, we're going back to the top of the table now, and we laugh at Spurs a little bit, and we mock them to a certain extent, but they've won both their games in the league. They've needed to, as they were knocked out of both cups in the last few weeks, and, you know, really, is it just third place they're fighting for now, or have they got a chance? They went ahead of Manchester City, didn't they, at one point this weekend?
Yeah, they did. I think that if they were playing different teams this week, then we probably would have seen... I mean, you saw them struggle against Newcastle as well. They struggled to break Newcastle down. They created chances on Saturday, but none of those chances were finished particularly well. And I know that it's the old sort of cliche when it comes to Tottenham, they were incredibly Spursy. They did the things that we associate with them for so long. And Harry Kane, if he was in the position that Lucas Moura was in on two or three occasions on Saturday, they probably would have won that game 3-0 or 4-0. You talk about Dele Alli being missing as well, and I don't think they have got a chance. Unfortunately, from Tottenham's point of view, I think they may actually finish outside the top three, because they've got so many games coming up now. We've seen the psychological impact that going out of a cup competition can have on a team, and they've done very well to avoid dropping any points in the Premier League since then. But I think that between now and when those players are likely to come back, Tottenham will start to drop off a little bit more. And as the sides that they play get more difficult, we will see more of a gap open up between them and the other two.
Yeah, you're right. You know, they are very much chugging their way through, aren't they? It's a one-goal victory against both Watford and Newcastle, both at Wembley. And as you say, you know, the performances themselves, you on another day, you get beat, and that's obviously the worrying aspect for them. And, you know, they are so thin on the ground. No signings in January. Kane and Ali both out and sorely missed. And, you know, they're fortunate to get Son back when they did. He's been a revelation in the last two games, hasn't he? And I think that's the biggest worry for them. You know, if they continue to get these injuries, they're struggling to get through the games. And then it comes to the summer, and it's the same kind of questions being asked again. Do they have to go and spend the money? Have they got the money to spend? And probably the biggest question, will the manager settle for one or two signings at best, or is that his cue to leave?
I think that Tottenham are in a transitional period. I think that it's quite obvious to say that, given what's happening with the stadium. But I think that a lot of their season hinges on what happens between now and May. And when I talk about their season, I'm talking about next season. I think if they go far in the Champions League, if they get into the new stadium before the end of this season, if they're able to do as much as they can between now and then to really cement their place in the top three, then they're giving themselves a really good opportunity. They're going into the Champions League for the third year running, it would be, if they do that. And to be going into it in the new stadium would be huge. We talk about West Ham and being able to attract players. Tottenham will be able to attract a higher calibre of players given the position that they find themselves in. And the most important thing from their point of view is that they keep hold of their manager. And it looks as though if what continues to happen in the red side of Northwest England happens, then they might be all right. They might be able to hold on to Pochettino for a little bit longer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we have to talk about Newcastle. We've mentioned them twice already. And you look at that game on Saturday, and they were set up to, first of all, not lose that game, and the one against Manchester City as well, and come away from both of those with you know, two of the top three with points is massive. And, you know, on Saturday they invited Spurs onto them. Realistically, were not for an otherwise excellent performance from Dubravka before making the obvious mistake. You know, they could have got a point, and I think that would have been a disappointing thing for Newcastle, the players, the fans, and the manager. And, you know, you have to, it's difficult again to ever reference Newcastle without thinking about what the long-term future is for them, but they've gone and broke the transfer record.
They have, yeah. And from that point of view, I think you have to look at it positively. I know that a lot of people are speculating that they've broke that with the caveat that Mike Afty will sell the club in the summer and he will get that money back as part of the deal to buy Newcastle. But either way, they've still got a hell of a player by the looks of things.
Yep.
And it's a really intriguing one from my point of view, because we don't see many players come over from the MLS to play in England. And you don't necessarily, you'd sometimes see younger players come over, but you don't often see somebody who's kind of prime in their career and who's done really well over there and won something. It's normally a youth team product who does all right for a little bit, but doesn't necessarily stake their claim for a place for too long.
Or a goalkeeper.
Yeah, naturally. and that's the interesting thing. It's how do we think this footballer's going to do? There's a lot of people saying that they think they'll struggle with the power of the Premier League, that physically he's not big enough. But you've got to give somebody a chance. And the fact that they've been willing to spend over 20 million on somebody and break a transfer record that stood for 15 years, it shows that they believe in him. And there's been a lot of players who've come and gone through that club since then who they didn't spend anywhere near that on because they didn't necessarily think that they could fulfil the potential. Now, I would be excited if I was a Newcastle fan, but a lot of that hinges on whether Rafa Benitez signs a new contract or not. If he goes in the summer, then you could have the best player from the whole of the Americas and you would still struggle with the rest of that squad. And organisation is absolutely key for Newcastle. We talk about it a lot, and you saw that on Saturday. They didn't really push Tottenham too hard. They didn't try and create too many chances. I think if Rondon had scored that goal where he hit the post, then they would have given themselves a really good chance of getting something from that game, because defensively they would have just had something to hold on to again. And we saw against Manchester City on Tuesday that they were able to do that, and it wouldn't have surprised me to see them hold on to 3 points at Wembley as well.
Yeah, it's a funny one. You know, we talk about Mike Ashley and he's derided by most quarters, and you know, actually Rafa Benitez is the key person at that club, and he's the difference between them effectively staying in the Premier League and not, and that's where Newcastle become a more valuable asset and a more marketable asset, and that's where they sell the club. But if he goes, then Mike Ashley's in the shit as well. You know, the fans are in the shit. It just all goes to pot, and I think that's the worry. How they keep Benitez is another question, though, and realistically, he's probably not going to go and spend another 20 million on someone else as well. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens in the summer. It's very much Groundhog Day again, and it may well be Groundhog Day come the start of next season if Rafa Benitez is still there. The pressure is going to be on them to stay up, but they're in a much better position to do so.
You are right. And talking of Rafa Benitez, one of his old clubs, Chelsea, probably had the biggest result over the last couple of weeks was the fact that they lost 4-0 midweek to Bournemouth. Now, obviously, they did bounce back with a 5-0 victory over Huddersfield on Saturday, but it was a really poor result, naturally, for Chelsea. But the performance really, really spoke volumes of what Maurizio Sarri said after the defeat against Arsenal, which was that he's really struggling to motivate those players. And you shouldn't have to have that sort of conversation with a team of professionals who are getting paid a huge amount of money each week and have been able to motivate themselves to win the Premier League in recent years. We forget sometimes that Chelsea have had a huge amount of recent success, and to be beaten 4-0 away at Bournemouth in that manner was incredibly disappointing.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. You know, he's probably right to come in for a lot of criticism, and some of the things he said probably haven't gone down very well, but objectively, you look at it, they're fourth, they're in a cup final, still in the European competition, the FA Cup, and it could be a lot worse. And I think I wish both of our clubs were in that position and being able to moan about it.
Yeah.
But you know, unfortunately, football is an entertainment business, as much as that pains me to say it. And more often than not, Chelsea have been quite poor to watch, particularly over the last 2 or 3 months. And there's obviously doubts around certain players staying and going. Sarri, probably not the most likeable chap or affable fella, but he is adamant that he wants to continue to play in this way. He still thinks that given 2 or 3 years, like Klopp's had at Liverpool, he can implement his style and effectively turn them into league challengers again. I'm not sure you get that much time at Chelsea. You don't get that much time pretty much anywhere, but at Chelsea, you just absolutely don't do that. And ultimately, they've had success in doing that as well, in not giving managers time and starting something new every time. So I'm not sure he's going to get his wishes with that one.
And we need to talk about the rough and the smooth, because obviously that defeat was a bad one, but the victory over Huddersfield on Saturday, as much as it was very straightforward, 2 goals for Gonzalo Higuain.
Yep.
Eden Hazard playing with more freedom because he wasn't isolated on his own. Just shows what can be done. So it's... It's easy to talk about the Bournemouth defeat and how bad things are, but like you say, a little bit of context, look at where they are, look at what they could achieve. And I mean, if Higuain scores 10 goals between now and the end of the season, then it'll be a great sign, and you imagine that Chelsea will probably go far in most of those competitions.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, but just behind them, and leapfrogging Arsenal this week, and Manchester United, a good week for them, or it certainly could have been worse, as they were 2-0 down at home to Burnley in midweek. And however, true Manchester United fashion, they came back with 2 late goals from Pogba and Lindelof, followed this up with a 10th game unbeaten under Solskjaer, beating Leicester 1-0 away from home, which is an impressive result, really.
It is indeed, and I think if you'd probably offered Manchester United 4 points at the start of the week, they probably would have taken it. Leicester's not an easy place to go. We've seen how well they've done against the big sides this season, albeit away from home. And I thought the performance from Manchester United was a mature one yesterday. I watched the game, and I think that Solskjaer's comments afterwards were quite telling. He said that he was very pleased with the result, but not the performance. Now, we've seen Manchester United play under Solskjaer, and as great as they've been going forward defensively, they've still looked a little bit error-prone, and I thought it was very important for them to be able to not necessarily look brilliant defensively yesterday, but they just looked organised. They looked like they were able to play football from the back. They were able to really put pressure on those Leicester players early on, and once they got the early goal, they didn't really look in any real danger of conceding.
I think the positive for them, as well as the defensive performance and as you say, that maturity, is that realistically they can beat anyone on their day now. And I don't think you could say that 3 months ago. You wouldn't fancy them to beat probably two-thirds of the sides in the league every week. So I think from that perspective, the consistency, the relentlessness of the way that they look like they're going at the moment is fantastic. But after Fulham away this weekend, which, you know, in theory is still a tough game, Fulham need to get something from it. They've got PSG twice in the Champions League, Liverpool in the league, and Chelsea in the FA Cup. And I think that's really where we're going to see Manchester United tested, because there's a lot of games in a short period of time as well. And, you know, as much as they've got a relatively deep squad, as you say, defensively, it's taken a long time to get them organised. They're possibly another injury away in defence from just having almost a collapse. And with all those games in mind as well, they're going to be tested. And I think that's where, you know, we'll really see whether they've got it, and also whether Solskjaer's got it as well.
Very true. I think we need to talk a little bit about Marcus Rashford, because he's on the score sheet again this weekend. And I think you look at the Manchester United side now, and there's, well, I thought prior to this game that the front three or four kind of picked themselves, but he gave Alexis Sanchez a start in this game, and Martial came off the bench. And that rotation will be key for Solskjaer, because they've got games coming up thick and fast, like you say. PSG is huge for them. The fact that Neymar's going to be missing both of those games is key to any chance that they've probably got of getting through that tie. But I just wonder what next for someone like Romelu Lukaku, because he looked very good at times for Manchester United early on in his career. He looks like the way that Solskjaer wants him to play, he's not necessarily going to have a position in that side. Yep. And what does he do in the summer? Does he cut his losses? Does he try and force his way back into the side? Or do you think he could go possibly to somewhere like Italy or Spain, where the game is a little bit slower and might suit him a little bit more?
I don't know. I mean, I think the biggest question is, what's his level? You know, at Everton, he was fantastic, and he was the shining light for that team. He was the one that they pinned all their hopes on. And, you know, unfortunately, you don't get that at Manchester United. You have to be a Cristiano Ronaldo to get that. And I think that's probably his biggest problem, because I think psychologically he'll be a confidence player as well. You've seen that. He looks bereft of confidence at times this season. And that's mainly because every time the ball falls to him, he's piling it over the bar. But, you know, I think a lot of it will depend on the manager. I think, you know, we're right in looking at the fact that that's how Solskjaer wants to play. You'd be mad to look at it and think much different, really, if you were another manager. You think, right, and to be fair, we could all see it as well, couldn't we? There was an obvious way of playing with that team. Not very good at the back. A lot of pace going forwards. Unfortunately, Lukaku is not the most blessed when it comes to the pace. So, you know, I think from that point of view, he's a great player to have in the squad, because it gives you a different dimension. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised in these few games I've got against the kind of top opposition, were he to make some sort of difference, potentially coming off the bench. You know, you only have to look at the impact that someone like Peter Crouch has, and we'll get onto that later. But, you know, it at least gives them another dimension if they're desperate for a goal, because he is a handful. You know, strong, he's powerful. Whilst he's not the quickest, he's probably as quick as other defenders in world football, which is enough at times. So I think, you know, there's still a place for him there, but if I was him, I'd probably be thinking about going elsewhere.
Yeah, and you mentioned that Manchester United leapfrogged Arsenal this weekend, and we need to talk about Arsenal. I know that we've touched on them already when we talked about Manchester City, but they were poor at the Etihad. There's no two ways about it, really. They look tired and quite leggy, and I wonder if this may be a theme for the rest of the season. Obviously, we know how hard that Emery's worked them, and Wenger didn't necessarily push them too hard, did he? And I think that some of those players will be getting to this stage and really starting to struggle, and given the amount of games that they will also have coming up, we know that they're still in the Europa League, and they've got ambition to finish in the top four in the Premier League as well. It's something that he's probably not been used to yet. Obviously, over in Spain, there is a winter break, and it's not something that you experience in England. So do you think he might regret working them as hard as he did early doors?
I don't think he's got a choice, to be honest. you know, that's exactly what that team has needed for kind of 4, 5, 6 years. And it may well kind of burn them out, but it will set them up going forward as well. And, you know, Arsenal have got a decent enough squad. I think, unfortunately, they suffer when it comes to some key injuries to individuals. You look at Hector Bellerin, for instance. He's been fantastic for them this season, and he's kind of their right back, right winger, and right attacker at times. And, you know, if you take someone like that out of the game, Stefan Lichtstein is not going to do that for you at all. So whilst they have got a big enough squad, I think the squad depth probably isn't good enough in terms of the quality. But I do think Emery's right to do this. You saw them against Chelsea the other week. They absolutely dominated them, and Arsenal haven't done that for a long, long time, and they seem to be dominating teams on a regular basis now. That said, they come up against the quality of Manchester City, and they can't afford to take their foot off the gas, and I think that's probably just what happened yesterday.
Yeah, and I think that that's where Arsenal have struggled, haven't they? They've struggled against the top six sides. You look at them going away to any of the other sides in the Premier League, and you always kind of think, well, there's a good chance they'll pick 3 points up today, but it's in these games against the big sides that they need to do something about, and it will be a constant frustration for them. And like we said at the start of the season, top four for Arsenal would be a great result, and if they're able to do that and maybe go far in the Europa League, because we know Emery's pedigree in that competition, then it will have been a decent season for them. And I think, similar to Chelsea, one bad result or two bad results doesn't make a season. We need to look at it from a long-term point of view, and I think Arsenal fans have to be realistic about the progress that's been made this season, and how much progress it was possible to make after the coming to an end of the Arsene Wenger era.
Absolutely. I mean, the noise coming from the club is that there could be some significant investment in the summer, so they're going to be keen to get into the Champions League, given the calibre of player that could bring. But I think the favourable fixtures coming up in the next month or so, and the hope of those above them kind of taking points off each other as well, I think it's going to be really interesting to see where they are kind of, start to mid-March, kind of 4 to 6 weeks. And if they're still in there, they've definitely got a chance.
Absolutely right. And that's your top six covered, and a couple of bonus ones too. Join us after this break for the Championship and our weekly trip down to sunny Lisbon.
Should have gone to Specsavers, Charlie, because I tell you what, he's not offside. Well, he's absolutely bang in line, not offside.
Well, maybe you should go also then, Jeff, because you couldn't see driving home the other night because you don't even wear your glasses in TV in case you get slagged off. So you just stick to Specsavers and I'll do the game.
Welcome back to part two of the Sweep Podcast, and we are taking a trip to the Championship. Much like the Premier League, number of sides in the Championship struggling to find consistency. One side that are, though, is Norwich City. Sit top of the pile following a huge 3-1 away win at second place Leeds this weekend. Following a draw, naturally, as they seem to alternate between those results most weeks. And both sides have good-looking fixtures coming up after this weekend, which sees Norwich in the Old Farm derby against lowly Ipswich. And it's a derby. Anything can happen. Whilst Leeds take on Middlesbrough, who will be confident coming off the back of a huge 3-2 win away at West Brom this weekend. Borough found some form after a dip last month, whereas West Brom have struggled of late to get going. Both sides remain level on points in the playoffs and 4 points behind Sheffield United, who look about the only challengers to the top two, and taking up the last playoff spot is Bristol City, who've shot up the table with 7 successive wins. This weekend away against Swansea, and Andy Vyman, former Villa man, is playing a pivotal role for them. Scored one, assisted one this weekend, and Lee Johnson is doing a fantastic job in them this season, and the fans look up for it too. They've been partying a lot, and you know, they've knocked on the door before, but perhaps this is their year, Michael. It'd be huge for them, wouldn't it?
It would indeed, yeah. I would very much like to see them up in the Premier League. I think it would be a nice surprise.
It would indeed. Good away day as well, you'd suspect, wouldn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah.
And behind them, Derby, level on points, but they're struggling to just string a run of results together. Frank Lampard's got them playing very, very well, of course, but it seems to be every time they win, they lose the following game. So just that little bit of consistency from them probably comes from the lack of experience, you'd have thought. And then between Birmingham, who are 8th, Swansea in 13th, there's 2 points between 6 teams. The list also includes Hull, Blackburn, Forest and Aston Villa. And Villa, who couldn't get anything but a point from strugglers Reading this weekend after stumbling past Ipswich the week before. Tyrone Mings has come in, shore up the defence if he can stay fit and not get suspended after a bad clash at the weekend. Also, Tom Carroll, who struggled with injuries, but a tidy player, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. He impressed me early on in his Tottenham career and then went to Swansea, and I kind of expected him to kick on from there, but I don't think that you can blame somebody like that for the relegation and everything that's gone on there since, and I think it'd be a great signing for Villa.
Definitely a Dean Smith type player, you
absolutely,
would have thought.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yannick Bolasie left to go back to Everton before going to Belgium with Anderlecht, and we had a bit of a chat about it, didn't we, when he went. And I think for me, I kind of went down the lines that it wasn't a great loss. I think he was a luxury player that we probably didn't need, bearing in mind we've got quite a few wingers as it was. And unfortunately, I just don't think he quite offered enough. He may well have got a few goals and assists, but I think a player of that quality should be shining a lot more than he did in the Championship. I think you had slightly differing views there, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was probably not necessarily too good for the team that he was playing in, but I just thought that his stats probably made him look a little bit better than maybe he was by watching him. And I thought it was a strange one that he was going to go back to Everton and not go to a Premier League side. I thought that it was absolutely nailed on. And seeing him go to Anderlecht's just a really weird one, because I know they're obviously one of the bigger sides in Belgium, and he'll go there and have the opportunity to play European football, and that's great and everything. But if it was me, I'd much prefer to try and get a team up into the Premier League, or at least try and help a team stay there. And it's just a really weird one in a career that so many expected to be on an upward trajectory. Yeah. That's hard to say after two days on the booze. It's not only faltering, but it's now faltering in a different country, and you just wonder whether he has any future at Everton or in the English game.
Yes, indeed. We shall see some tough fixtures for Villa coming up. Sheffield United on Friday night, then Brentford and Stoke away, West Brom at home, and we've got to be winning three of them, really, to be in with a chance of reaching the playoffs. I think the only thing working in our favour is everyone does really seem to be inconsistent and beating each other, so there's still a chance until it's kind of mathematically not possible in the Championship. But I think we have to look further down the league, where below that chasing pack for the playoffs, number of clubs not really looking like doing much and just coasting through the rest of the season. Although you do see with the Championship, don't you, there's kind of one team that does have that spurt towards the end of the season where they seem to win 10 games and edge getting into playoffs. Perhaps Bristol City were and are that team, though. We shall see. And then down at the bottom, Ipswich look a long way off and are all but gone, really. And then really a three-way fight for one survival place between Bolton, Reading and Rotherham, and none of which managed to win in the last three games. Millwall and Wigan hover precariously, but I think they'll probably be confident of staying out of trouble, you would have thought.
You would indeed. And following that roundup, we need to go to Portugal to find out how our... I was going to say high flyers, but they haven't been flying so high of late, have they?
We've put the Hertha curse on them a bit, haven't we?
Yeah, the Sweeper podcast curse has befallen Sporting Lisbon. And, yeah, they could only manage a draw away at Vitória Setúbal before the big game against local rivals Benfica this weekend, and that didn't get them any better either.
No.
We lost 4-2 at home against the league's second-place team. Bruno Fernandes, the only bright spark.
Yep.
He pulled one back just before half-time after Benfica went 2-1 ahead, and then the boys came out for the second half, looked back on it, and it took 2 minutes for Benfica to kill the game, didn't it? So that was that. A pizzy penalty stretched the lead to 3 before a consolation for our man Baz Dost in the dying seconds, but that was pretty much everything. Sporting remain in fourth, miles off the top three, 7 points off third place Braga, 8 off Benfica, and a huge 11 points off Porto in top. Having looked at the fixtures, I think that you would hope they'd be able to claw a few points back in the next couple of weeks. I know they've got Braga in a fortnight, and I have got a fact for you this week, but
yeah.
And it's not this. I was just going to say Cristiano Ronaldo was in attendance for the game yesterday.
He was there.
Not my fact, though. Just thought I'd let everybody know that. My fact is all about the Sporting Lisbon crest this week, and since its formation on July the 1st, 1906, Sporting has had 6 crests, all of which included the colour green and the lion. Their current crest was adopted in 2001, so that makes it 18 years old.
Yes, good maths.
Thank you very much. I think that's probably enough for that part. Can we go for a break?
We can indeed. Join us after this short break, where we're going to get back into the Premier League.
Get in there!
Well done, he's 13.
Game, set and match, Owen.
Welcome back to the Sweeper Podcast, and it's time to look at the best of the rest, the middle of the league, the chasers for that elusive seventh place. And we're going to start in the Midlands with the old gold Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Indeed, the old gold currently at the top of that pile, Wolverhampton Wanderers. And that's exactly where they're probably hoping to be at this stage of the season. Not sure they're expecting it, though, are they?
No, and very little doubt about the top six now, but from 7th down to West Ham in 12th, there's 7 points, a decent amount of inconsistency, and generally a fair bit of entertainment. And we did say at the start of the show that only two sides had won their last two games, and Wolves are one of them. It was two of those mid-table rivals that they beat in West Ham at home, and probably more impressively, Everton away on Saturday, and a performance which maybe says a little bit more about Everton than it does about Wolves. But even so, you've got to go there and win, and that's what they did.
It probably shows the quality they've got beating those sides around them, though. You know, they've done well against the big sides as well, the top six sides really this season. But I think, you know, as well as playing out of sorts teams, you've still got to beat what's put in front of you. And I think if you look at the way they've managed to come through a tough period, I think it was probably at the back end of last year, you know, they've had individuals as well who've shone. And, you know, you look at Jota, Jimenez, Ruben Neves in particular over the last few weeks, where, you know, they're effectively players that have started to find that level of consistency with the step up to the Premier League now. And there's obviously the defence that have sorted themselves out as well. And I think going forward, that model that they kind of had where they signed those players in the summer does seem to be working. I think it'd be interesting to see how other teams react to that, and potentially buyers of teams as well.
Yeah, I think it's a very valid point. And while we're talking about buying players, I think the signing of Tammy Abraham could actually have disrupted Wolves. I think by bringing him in, they've played all season with Jimenez in there, and Jota and Neves have been sort of playing off him as a central striker, and you just wonder whether the shape of the team would have changed a little bit with Tammy Abraham, because they are different footballers. They do play different games, and I think that Jimenez deserves a huge amount of credit. Young player, first season in English Premier League football, and I think that he's been a real handful for defences who wouldn't necessarily have been too worried about him at the start of the season.
You're right. 4 points behind Wolves, Watford, and you've only got to look at the table to see what they're about. Won and lost 9 apiece, drawn 7, pretty much scored as many as they've conceded. And I think it's only really recent weeks where they've struggled to score goals. You know, the defeat at Spurs, despite really being in the game, will have been disappointing. But that was sandwiched between 2-0 draws. And I think key for them are looking much more solid at the back. And I'd say that's really why they are where they are this season.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that Javi Grazzi has done a fantastic job there, becoming a very consistent Premier League side after years of being between the top two divisions. And they've made massive strides. And I think that you're probably unlikely to see him linked with another job elsewhere, because of the fact that he is quite a no-nonsense manager. There's no real frills about that Watford side, but actually they're enjoyable to watch for that very reason. You go into every game not necessarily knowing what result you're going to get, and you don't expect them to win away at a side, but equally you don't expect them to be beaten by a top six side at home. So it's probably a nice sort of season off for Watford fans, because normally at this point of the season their manager's being linked with the sack, or they've already brought somebody in to replace him. So from that point of view, they've had one of their more enjoyable Premier League seasons. They've got players who are competing in every position, and it's nice to see a club like that stabilise a little bit after so many years of, like we said earlier, inconsistency.
It's a big game against Everton at the weekend in the Marco Silva derby, and opportunity to stretch the 1 point lead over the Toffee men, who are just so inconsistent. To go to Huddersfield and win in tough conditions, a great result, but alongside a cup exit, they lost to Wolves at the weekend, Southampton, the previous round of fixtures. Silva is looking more and more beleaguered by the game, and he's still maintaining the players need to fight and effectively work harder for the results. And you wonder, is he looking at himself there as well?
I think literally is, because his quiff seems to lose volume every week. Honestly, the hairstyle seems to represent the current form and mood around Goodison.
It's like David Brent when it's going wrong for him, isn't it?
Crikey.
Just looks a shadow of him former self.
He does indeed, yeah. And I think that obviously they've got Manchester City visiting next, and like you said just now, the game against Watford, it doesn't necessarily get any easier. They need to get the fans on side, and I'm not convinced they'll get rid of him because of the amount of compensation that they paid to get him, and I think that this agreement...
Well, they haven't wasted any money on anyone, have they?
Well, exactly. I mean, the agreement that was supposedly made with Watford to bring him in was an expensive one, and the signings that they made in the summer, like you referred to there, haven't necessarily been brilliant so far. Probably Richarlison aside, who deserves credit. He obviously got the goal at Huddersfield in the week, and I think that Everton have had very few things to get too excited about, but the positive from their point of view is they are still in ninth position. I don't think anyone expected them to challenge the top six this season. If they can finish seventh, then it would be a great season, and all it would take would be a few wins. But talking of the fixtures they've got coming up, it's difficult to see where they're going to come from in the short term.
That's the thing, you know, for Everton, they're a club that if as long as you've got the fans on side, you're doing all right. But they haven't at the minute. You know, they are booing them every single game, and there's a Merseyside derby on the horizon, and they've also got to see Liverpool where they are at the moment, potentially going on to win the league. I you know, if the boo boys are still out by then and they lose that game fairly easily at home, I'm saying it could be curtains for him.
It's possible. I mean, the one plus point from the transfer window from an Everton point of view is the fact that they managed to keep hold of Idrissa Gueye, who...
And how?
Well, that's the thing. Obviously, he was subject to a number of bids from PSG, and I'm quite surprised that he's not tried to force his way into that
definitely.
Side, because it is a big step up. We know that, and I think that he's been one of the most consistent midfield performers in the probably top half of the Premier League for quite a while now, and he's somebody that played for Aston Villa and didn't necessarily go brilliantly for him then, but that maybe says a little bit more about who he was playing with and who the manager was rather than his individual ability. And I do believe he probably will move on in the summer, but I think it's massive for him and Watford. We talked about holding on to Doucouré as well. They're two massive players in similar positions who do so much for those football clubs.
Yeah, I mean, Idrissa Gueye was... you could see he was head and shoulders at Villa. You know, we were really struggling. I think it was the season we got relegated that he went. And I really hope he goes for about 100 million, because I'm pretty sure we've got a sell-on clause.
I think you might struggle with 100 million, but you never know.
You never know, indeed.
Let's move down to the south coast, where Bournemouth have had a pretty good week, haven't they? I know that obviously they didn't get anything at Cardiff on Saturday, but if you'd have offered them 3 points from those two games, probably would have taken it.
Yeah, definitely. I think, again, they're another one struggling for that consistency. Obviously, the 4-0 win over Chelsea is nothing to be sniffed at. It's an extraordinary result and an extraordinary performance as well. And, you know, they showed what they can do, and they did it on that night without Callum Wilson as well, which I think we've all probably question marked Bournemouth over the last few months while he has been out, whether they could do that, and clearly they could. And I think just importantly as well, they kept a clean sheet. Asmir Begovic was dropped, and you look at Artur Boruc coming in, he had a fantastic game, and perhaps it did follow the Sweeper podcast advice, because we brought up the fact that Begovic was at fault for the most goals over the last year or so, and I think that's crucial for Bournemouth, because the defence isn't great and they have to have some form of solidity there, and they have to have a kind of controlling, influencing figure behind them. Now, Boruc is a bit of a nightmare at times.
He's
a
basket case of
the
goalkeeper.
Yeah, he is, but equally he has shown for them before that he's a good performer for the majority of the time.
Yeah, and I think that's the difficulty, isn't it? Because obviously he keeps the clean sheet in that game, and then he makes a mistake for the goal at Cardiff on Saturday evening, and that'll be the disappointing thing. But, I mean, Bournemouth unfortunately look like they may become a victim of their own success. It's been talked about for quite a while now that nobody seemed to go in for their players, and maybe that was because they didn't necessarily think they could make the step up. But you've got Nathan Ake, you've got Callum Wilson, and you've now got David Brooks, who've all been linked with big money moves in the last window. And Brooks has been linked with a £50 million bid from Tottenham in the summer, and you look at him and you think he's exactly the sort of player that Pochettino would go for. He fits the mould perfectly, and he could potentially take them to the next level. You also look at the fact that Nathan Ake and Callum Wilson have been linked with Chelsea, and it's not like a side, and this isn't any disrespect to the likes of Everton or Watford, but it's not a sort of 6th, 7th, 8th team that are going for those players. We are talking about teams in the top 4 year in, year out, and it will be very difficult for Bournemouth to hold on to those players. What you do imagine is that if they do go, the money will be reinvested into the squad, and looking at the transfer business that Eddie Howe's done there in the past, you'd probably back them to be able to bring replacements in.
I think the biggest question would be the amount of money talked about. You know, if those three players went, you'd get £150 million, which sounds ridiculous saying it, but you know, as much as they're also buying a new stadium, which will help pay for a large part of that, how do they attract that next level of player? You know, the signings that he makes are very, very good, and there are some effectively high profile signings that he has made, but you look at someone like Jermaine Defoe, for instance, he was coming to the twilight of his career. Nathan Ake, fantastic, didn't get his opportunity at Chelsea really, so had to go somewhere else and prove himself, yet now has done that and potentially moves on. Do they keep signing that caliber of player, or can they afford to go out and spend an extra 10, 15 million on someone to get someone of a higher level already?
I don't think that Bournemouth will ever go to the next level, and that may be...
That's because they won't or can't.
I think it's more the fact that they don't have the potential as a football club to get there at at this stage. You look at somebody like Jefferson Lerman, who signed for them in the summer. He's probably the most high-profile foreign player that they've ever signed, and that's the difficulty in the market, is that if they try and sign players from Chelsea, for example, who are playing in the youth team, look at Callum Hudson-Odoi. They're now putting huge, huge transfer fees onto these players because they know of the potential value that they can get by going to another side. And I think that's where it becomes difficult for clubs like Bournemouth to try and unearth these gems who are playing in youth teams or reserve teams or, sorry, under 23 teams as they are now. And that's where that model will grind to a halt at some stage, and they probably will have to look at markets elsewhere. But then if they're able to unearth gems like David Brooks from Sheffield United, who they didn't pay a huge amount of money for, then they could maybe do it by going down the leagues. I just think that by trying to get players from the top four, top six, who are on the periphery, you're going to struggle, because those sides will see them as more valuable assets as time goes on.
We shall see. Last but not least in this bunch, we've got Leicester City, and we've spoken about both Leicester games already against Liverpool and Manchester United. A tough run, which continues this weekend when they go to Wembley to take on Spurs. But then after that, they play those in the lower to middle end of the table, and I think they'll look to build on a fairly impressive showings against those top clubs and pick up points. You know, they're a side that have showed they can do it and showed they can really rally around each other, particularly in recent weeks. And I think importantly that, you know, they've rallied around the manager as well, because it was only kind of 3-4 weeks ago that it looked as though he was going to be on his way, and that game against Wolves where they didn't even win it showed that they're playing for something. And, you know, I don't know what they're playing for. They're not really playing for anything in theory, but that they're playing for each other, and that's the very least that the fans will want to see. It's the very least the manager will want to see, and I think he's now got a chance to certainly see out the rest of the season whether he continues with the club after that. I'm not sure, but there's that kind of spirit that Leicester showed in the title winning season that they've just had filtered out slightly over the last couple of years, that they're now starting to show again.
Yeah, I think they're probably playing for the shirt. I think they were probably reminded of what happened there earlier in the season off the pitch.
And
I think that when you put that sort of thing into perspective, it's really a sort of basic line that you ask players to come in and give 100% for the manager. It shouldn't be questioned. And you may have egos in a football side, but look at what they were able to do when that horrendous stuff happened to the football club earlier on. And I think Claude Puel's come out of the last couple of games with a decent amount of credit. I know that they haven't beaten Manchester United, but they put in a spirited display without really troubling them offensively. And obviously they went to Anfield and picked up a really valuable point. And I think that if you look at those two games, they probably would have expected to lose at Anfield and maybe at best got a point from Manchester United. So I think that they've had a really tough run of games, and I think that the fact that he's been backed in the transfer market as well will give him a lot of confidence that maybe his job isn't on the line just yet.
You say about the transfer market, they made a signing last week, Youri Tielemans, who comes highly rated, signed from Monaco with Adrian Silva going the other way. Remember him?
Yeah, I remember them having to wait for about 6 months for him to be able to play, because didn't they sign him without a work permit? Or
signed him 14 seconds after the deadline, it was, and they probably wish it was about a year after the deadline, because he's had very, very, very little impact, and yeah, he's fairly average. But I think, you know, we look at the new lad, a young Belgian talent, played 5 years of football, he's only 21, and I really enjoyed his first interviews. He just kept emphasising everything. I'm really excited. I really love the Premier League. Everyone is really kind and really nice. I think it'll be really good here. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how he gets on.
That was really enlightening. And that's the battle for seventh dealt with now. So it's time for the magic of the cup after this short break.
Got you folks here to talk about this FA Cup.
The FA Cup!
That ain't no name.
You need something big, like a bowl.
The FA Bowl.
The FA Super Mega Bowl.
Man, you ain't even got no cheerleaders.
Add some Jazz Mataz.
I said I wasn't gonna tell nobody, but I just can't keep it to myself.
I want the Rumble in Langley.
The Thriller in the Villa.
The man without imagination. He stands on Earth. He has no wings. He cannot fly.
No rematches, you crazy?
Welcome back to the Sweep Podcast, and we are going to go to the FA Cup, where people question the magic of the cup and whether it still exists. And I think this fourth round showed that he's very much still alive and kicking.
Absolutely right, yeah. From the first game to the last, there was all sorts of action. Manchester United swept Arsenal aside at the Emirates 3-1, and some of the football on show was magnificent. It was arguably Solskjaer's biggest test yet, and his side passed it with flying colours. Then on the Saturday, saw perennial winner Frank Lampard take his Derby side to the Cauldron in Accrington, and it's fair to say the 1-0 win was very kind to him. The passion that John Coleman shared after the game was wonderful and heartbreaking.
It was.
He said he was slowly falling out of love with football. What could have caused that, I hear you ask?
Referees, of course. We hate referees. Said we hate referees. What do you hate?
I can't. Anthony Taylor. I hate Anthony Taylor and Peter Crouch.
More on that later. Manchester City won 5-0 again, this time beating Burnley. Newport County snatched a 93rd minute equaliser at Middlesbrough to bring Newport's own Tony Pulis back to Rodney Parade for a replay. And Watford were pretty much the only mid-table side in the Premier League to progress on the day, beating Newcastle. And you know the teams, I mean, the ones with very little to play for who should be going for a cup win. Just didn't happen, did it? Brighton managed to draw, as did Wolves, who were almost shocked by Shrewsbury Town, were it not thanks to an injury time equaliser from Matt Doherty. And there was a literal battle at the Den as Everton were knocked out by Millwall, as were some fans. And the biggest shock of the round was our nominated team in our road to the FA Cup. AFC Wimbledon absolutely battered West Ham, didn't they?
They did it indeed, and they thoroughly deserved it too. They were excellent, and it was the complete epitome of why we should still love the FA Cup. The Sunday was brilliant as well. It saw a couple of games with Chelsea progressing following a win at home to Sheffield Wednesday, and another upset with Palace knocking Spurs out of the second cup competition in as many days with a 2-0 win.
It was many games, but we know what I mean. The final game's a thriller too in the Battle of the Bees. Barnet and Brentford, a 3-3 goal fest. That said, goals were of the highest quality too, with Sparks goal winning the goal of the round. And when we talk about the round, the fifth round, the next round, it sees some mouth-watering clashes. Chelsea and Manchester United, Middlesbrough and Newport hosting Manchester City. Our boys, AFC Wimbledon, got an appealing home tie against Championship strugglers Millwall.
They could go all the way. You've then got Bristol City hosting Shrewsbury or Wolves. Doncaster will welcome Crystal Palace to South Yorkshire. There's so many of the big Premier League sides already gone from the competition that most of the sides that are still in there will be taking it so seriously. So we should hopefully get some cracking games in a couple of weeks' time.
Fingers crossed, you shall see us all over the place supporting the Dandy Dons.
Indeed, and that's it for this part. We're going to go to a break and then round up the rest of the Premier League.
Battle at the bottom.
Simon goes down in a manner that seems impossible. If I tug your jumper now, let's try it. Oh no, you didn't fall over. That's incredible. Confusing for all, certainly for myself. I thought it was bizarre.
Welcome back to the Sweeper Podcast, and the relegation battle is very much alive and kicking, and we're going to start off with a side who've struggled of late, and I think they're well and truly in that battle now, and that is Brighton and Hove Albion.
Yes, I think you're right. Much better performance this weekend against Watford, but still couldn't take anything more than a point from away from the game, and you know, it leaves them without a win in the league since the end of December, which is massive for them, really, isn't it? I think more worryingly would have been the defeat away at Fulham last week. To lose 4-2 there is tough to take, especially for a side who are renowned for trying to be solid at the back, and that was after taking a 2-goal lead after just about a quarter of an hour as well.
And it's criminal to lose out there, given how poor Fulham have been of late, and they've got the worst away record in the league outside the bottom three, which kind of tells you everything that you need to know about Brighton. Do you think they are in danger of getting dragged in, and if so, would you expect them to cope with it?
They're definitely in danger, and that is the worry. I'm not sure how they can cope with it, because they're on such a bad run at the moment as well, and you know, there are sides below them that do seem to be grinding out results, and eventually they're just going to keep catching up to them, and I think that's the worrying aspect, because aside from Glenn Murray, there's not really anything, is there? They're not really showing anything.
See, I'm going to be a little bit more positive about Brighton. I think they probably will have enough, and I think that's based on where they find themselves at the moment. I don't think they'll feel too pressured by it at the moment. I think they're still probably a good sort of 8 points away from where they'd really start to worry.
Was it not similar last season? Did they get dragged into it a little bit later on?
Yeah, and then it got towards the end of the season, and they did exactly what I expect them to do this season. So I think they've got a 4 or 5 point gap over Crystal Palace, Burnley, yeah, teams like that at the moment, and you look lower down, and Cardiff are getting a little bit closer, but I still think they'll probably be okay.
And then we've got Crystal Palace, who They're an exciting side to watch in recent weeks, or at least unpredictable. Relatively poor at Southampton last week, but still managed to snatch a 1-1 draw, and then they beat Fulham 2-0 at home. And that was massive for them, you know, to beat the sides around you, or at least stop them winning exactly what you need to do. And a huge signing for them as well. Signed a striker finally, Michy Batshuayi from Chelsea on loan, and bless Roy Hodgson, he went to bed to find out in the morning from a text. And yeah, it's just, I'm not staying up for the window, fuck that, I'm just going to bed.
It is quite late for a man of his age, isn't it? I think that
I bet he gets up about 4 o'clock.
Oh yeah, I bet
he goes to bed at 6.
Absolute football nerd, just really, really loves the game, doesn't he? So fair play to him. And I think that, seriously, it is a good signing. He didn't fare too well in Spain, but Valencia's not been the easiest place to go over recent years. And I think that you look at how good he was when he went to Dortmund, you've got somebody there who could really set the bottom half of the table alight within the next probably game or so. And
yep,
they looked very good against Fulham in patches. He obviously got the assist for the second goal, and I think that it will take pressure off the likes of Benteke as well, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him end his goal drought soon. And he nearly did that in spectacular fashion, didn't he, on Saturday?
He did.
That bicycle kick was not the sort of thing that you expected from somebody who's been so long without a goal.
Thoughts on Wilf Zaha's sending off last week for applauding the referee at Southampton?
I mean, I love it because it's just really funny to see the talisman of the team that you're playing against get sent off. But at the same time, it is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen on a football pitch. It was so obvious that it was going to happen. And the fact that he then continued to clap the referee as he went off the pitch has got him in even more trouble. So it's silly. Hodgson told him off and he came out and apologised to the fans afterwards. But I mean, I watched that game and Crystal Palace weren't amazing, but Southampton weren't either. And I think if Zaha had stayed on the pitch, they may well have gone on to win it. So I think he's probably cost his side there a little bit. And they've done well to win without him. They obviously put that curse to bed a few weeks ago now. Yeah. And it will be a case of looking up for Roy Hodgson now. And I, for one, think Palace will be absolutely fine.
Yeah, I agree. You know, they host West Ham at the weekend, and I suspect they'll be smelling blood. And behind them are Newcastle, who we've spoken about earlier. And you know, they're level on points with Burnley and Southampton, who we unfortunately watched this weekend. We'll talk about Southampton first. Ultimately, unbeaten in 5, is it now? And there's definite signs of improvement. A frustrating game this weekend. I think a draw was probably a fair result. But I think ultimately they were probably the better side. It wasn't difficult to come out
they
of that looking the better side.
They were definitely the better side in terms of trying to play football. I think that I didn't realise that Burnley were that poor.
We'll get on to that in a second.
That Southampton did well not to be dragged too far down to their level. I think it happened in the first half. I think that we did get dragged to that level, and then Hassan Hüttl spoke to them at half time and probably explained that there was a decent amount of space where they would be able to exploit those Burnley defenders, and we saw that. And the performance against Crystal Palace, as disappointing as it was not to beat a relegation rival, it's important not to give a relegation rival 3 points. And I kind of take the same viewpoint from the game on Saturday with Burnley. The fact that we lost to a last minute penalty is the most Southampton thing ever, but at the same time you think that they've not picked up the 3 points at home to a side that were below them at the start of play. So it's still all to play for down there, and we're by no means clear of danger, but we've given ourselves a fighting chance, and I think that's more than we had with Mark Hughes in charge. And the football is better. The worry for me is the fact that Danny Ings went off injured again, and it just puts a huge amount of pressure on the players like Redmond and Ward-Prowse, who've scored goals of late.
Yeah, I mean, they've both been brilliant. I thought Redmond took his goal very, very well the other day. I thought Ward-Prowse, playing slightly out of position at the weekend, looks comfortable. And I think probably for me the biggest takeaway is the defence looks much better now. I mean, coming under the barrage of pressure that they came under at the weekend to almost keep a clean sheet was fantastic to see. And particularly when we, you know, I hark back to when we went to Wolves away, and it was just dreadful. It was so little organisation.
Yeah.
And you look at even someone like Vestergaard, who I thought didn't have the ability to play at this level, whereas actually he looks very, very settled and assured now.
And I think it's confidence. I think it's playing with players alongside you that you believe in, and I don't think that level of belief was there under Mark Hughes. I think that Hasan Hüttl's given them the strength of character to go out there and believe that they're good enough to win Premier League football matches, and I think they had that for 93 and a half minutes on Saturday. It's just unfortunate that the introduction of Peter Crouch ultimately cost them 3 points, because he did foul Jack Stevens in the build-up to that goal. It was very easy to see on a replay, but very difficult for the referee at the time.
Yeah.
And I think that given the fact that he probably got the one in the first half wrong as well, it maybe was just a case of evening it out. And we've seen it so many times that you're not really surprised with Premier League referees that that's the sort of decision that they do tend to make.
We're on to Burnley, possibly the worst side in the Premier League I've ever seen in the flesh. And I'm a Villa fan, and we were dog shit for about 3 or 4 years, but just disgusting to watch. No game plan other than to just bypass the midfield, chase long balls, and then as the game goes on, they just wait for teams to sit deeper and deeper and then just launch the balls for knockdowns. And it just... It's effective, and you know they're in a great run of form, which will no doubt save their season, and they'll be happy with that. But there's just no progression in any way, shape, or form. I don't know whether it's they don't have the players to do that, whether they only have the players to do that. I can't get my head around it. But I think when you look at the fact that Peter Crouch is probably going to get more minutes for Burnley than he would do at Stoke, that kind of says everything you need to know about it.
And that's the thing for Burnley fans, if you're quite happy to just watch that week in, week out, then you...
Which they seemed relatively content to do.
You probably will end up staying in the Premier League, but my worry would be, from a Burnley point of view, is they're not going to stay up playing that football for another season next season. I think that there will be a team who will come up from the Championship who will be able to maintain their position in the Premier League, and straight away that's another step back for Burnley. So I think that... At the moment, they're kind of the best of the sides that are outside the bottom three on the basis that they've been able to pick points up recently and they've moved themselves up. But I just don't think it's a sustainable method. I think that it's a different level of football to what they were playing last season. I think that Crouch is a bit of a panic buy, but I think that Sean Dyche will probably look at how effective they looked when he came on Saturday, and I think that will probably be a tactic that will go for week in, week out now. The one thing that I'd say is, if you were an opposing manager watching that game, then or a manager going there to scout the game, you would just tell your defenders to play 5 yards further up the pitch. Peter Crouch can't win knock-ons from halfway into his own half. He can only win them on the edge of the 6 yard box, or sorry, the edge of the 18 yard box, and by dropping deep it just invites pressure. Don't do it, and you should be alright against that side.
I was impressed with James Tarkowski. It's the first time I've seen him play in the flesh, and he's very short with the ball at his feet. He's very kind of organised and aware of what's going on, and I think, you know, as much as Burnley concede a lot of possession, a lot of shots, he still seems relatively controlled, and thought he was brilliant. I thought Tom Heaton was good as well. Again, he's someone who seems to be very kind of mature and controlled in his manner, and you can tell that they have made a huge difference certainly when he's been there, and they look a lot harder to beat when, particularly when the two of them are on the pitch.
I totally agree, and the one thing that may save both Southampton and Burnley are the fact that there are three worse sides than them currently. The only one that looked like they have some hope are Cardiff.
Yeah, and I think it's difficult not to mention the torrid couple of weeks that Cardiff have had. They signed Emiliano Sala from Nantes in France to spearhead their campaign to stay up. And what follows after is just a tragedy of all proportions, a plane crash. Nobody really knowing what happened. We're starting to get snippets of that now, but obviously our thoughts go out to his friends, family, and those associated with all of his previous clubs. And you could see the emotion that was around the stadium on Saturday, and you can't help feel that the players and the fans would have used this, because it was a superb result against Bournemouth. A 2-0 win was exactly what they needed, especially the two sides above drawing with each other as well.
Yeah, and I don't think that anyone could really say anything about that Cardiff win. I was disappointed at the time because the team below my team had won, but then you can afford them a victory in these circumstances, and I think most people are quite pleased for Cardiff. I'm not a big fan of Neil Warnock, but I was very pleased to see how emotional it made him at the final whistle, the fact that he was able to experience those emotions after what must have been the most difficult month or so from his point of view as a football manager. And it does put things into perspective, but at the same time, we do need to talk about the game, because that's why we're here. And you look at Bobby Reid, somebody who's not really done a huge amount for Cardiff since he's gone in there, and he just looked like he'd had a new lease of life. He looked like somebody who wanted to play football, and I think that he was able to give Cardiff fans and also the players around in the belief that they have got what it takes to stay in this division, because they've done okay against the sides around them, but they've struggled to beat teams that are further up the table. And in beating Bournemouth, a side that we've seen beat Chelsea 4-0 on Wednesday, that will give that side the confidence that they will need between now and the the end of the season. And I really hope from a Cardiff point of view that they stay up, but it pains me to say that, because as I've said before, that probably means Southampton going down. So hopefully there is a worse team and they can stay up, because I think everyone in football would probably like to see them finish the season on a positive note, given what's happened to them so far.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, we've seen tributes everywhere. The tributes at the game were wonderful. And you mentioned Neil Warnock. It had hit him hard, and you wonder whether that's going to give him some fight for the rest of the season, whether it gives the club some fight. And, you know, they've got some good fixtures coming up, and a trip to Southampton this weekend is the six-pointer, isn't it?
It is indeed, and I think that if Southampton win that, they will stay up on the basis that they'll find themselves 5 or 6 points clear of the relegation zone. I think if Cardiff win that, then they put themselves in a brilliant position to stay in the Premier League, and Southampton will be staring down the barrel of a gun.
Absolutely. And 19th, we've got Fulham. As we've already said about Fulham, you know, a huge win against Brighton last week, which keeps them just about still in it, but, you know, they have to be trying to scrape results elsewhere, which really didn't look like happening at Palace this weekend. Palace weren't fantastic, but then they ground the result out. But I think with Fulham, you know, they didn't do a huge amount of business in the window. Ryan Babel and Lazar Markovic, the two coming in, and Abubakar Kamara going out, which I would say is a massive blessing given the amount of trouble he's been causing recently. But I think if you look at the bigger picture, you know, I think what Fulham have got is someone in Ranieri who should know and probably does know what he needs and wants to do, but I think the frustration lies that his team just look erratic at the best of times.
They do, and you kind of thought after that Brighton win that they would push on, didn't you? And they now find themselves 7 points behind 17th position, and not only that, their goal difference is the absolute pitch. So yep, that's essentially another point when you look at it that way. So they're going to have to claw back 9 points, and that means they have to win 3 games and at least one of the sides above them lose 3 games. And I just struggle to see that happening. I think that it probably is the end of the road for Fulham, which I didn't think I'd be saying a few weeks ago.
No, I don't think anyone did.
That they had enough to stay up. But I would say that if they're able to win 2 of the next 3, then it gives them a fighting chance. But I just don't see that happening, given the fixtures that they've got coming up.
Yeah, and you know, you look at someone like Mitrovic, he's so key for them for the remainder of the season. If anything happens to him, they're gone. I would say the biggest question for me is, what happens if they go down? Squad's probably too big for the Championship. There's players there that would be desperate to jump ship as well.
Absolutely right. And that brings us to our final club, which, as most of you know, is Huddersfield Town. Bottom of the pile and not really showing many signs of it getting any better. They are now 13 points adrift, and I think they'll probably be planning for life outside the top flight.
Doesn't sound any better when you say it out loud, does it?
No, really. And they have had some tough games, granted. They've had Chelsea, Everton and Manchester City in the last three, but we know that they're not really the issues are the fact that they've been unable to beat the sides around them and perform in the games that you would expect them to perform in. Jan Sievert's come in, and you sort of expected that he'd have a little bit of an impact, but it's a really difficult time to come into the club. You're coming in to the club following the most successful manager in a long, long time, and I think that the performance on Saturday against Chelsea was hard to take as a Huddersfield fan, because they didn't look like they had a huge amount of fight and spirit that we've associated with them for so long now. And I don't know, I think you've got to just sort of cling on to the fact that they can start stringing a few results together, and then you never know. Look at what happened to West Brom last season. They were absolutely miles adrift, and then Darren Moore went in there and nearly achieved the impossible. So until it's mathematically impossible for them to stay in the league, they will have a little bit of hope, but it's obviously a very, very uphill task from now.
On a lighter note, how good was the announcement of the new manager?
It was very good.
Starring Martin from Wakefield, the man who Sky believed to be Sievert in his own MNF kit, with his place at the manager's table to be greeted by Sievert, saying, "Not now, Martin from Wakefield." I would say the acting lessons must have paid off, and it was Oscar worthy.
Absolutely right. The big question before we get to the quiz, Mitch, is who is going down? I want your bottom three, please.
Huddersfield and Fulham.
Right.
And
bet that took some thinking about.
I do think it's going to be Cardiff, which is a shame to say, but after watching Burnley, I hope it's them.
Okay, well, that's that.
Ruining football. What about you?
I am going to sit well and truly on the fence. I agree with you on the bottom two. I just think it's too tight to say at the moment. It's between Cardiff, Burnley and Southampton. I don't know whether any of those sides is really the favourite at this moment. I'd say that they've all got as good a chance as each other of staying up, given the fixtures that they've got between now and the end of the season. My hope, from a Southampton fan's point of view, is that we will have enough to stay up, and recent form would point to the fact that we should. But yep. But you just don't know in this situation, and it will be very interesting nonetheless.
It will indeed. Well, that is all. That's all for the football. Join us after this short break, where we're going to get to the quiz. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely. Welcome back to the final part of this week's Sweeper podcast, where we are going to take a trip to that little quiz. But first of all, let me tell you, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at The Sweeper Pod, Instagram and Facebook, search The Sweeper Podcast, email us at thesweeperpodcast@gmail.com, and whilst we're at it, get us on Apple iTunes, get rating, reviewing, subscribing, sharing,
YouTubing,
yeah, just YouTube us, Spotify us, just get on it.
All the exciting stuff. Talking of getting on it, it's time to get on with this week's quiz. Mitch is currently 7 points behind, but he's had a little bit of a renaissance of late, haven't you? I did terribly in my effort a week and a half ago, and you did particularly well in your last go as well. Yeah. And I reckon you might do all right today, because given our states after the weekend, I struggled to really put this together.
I'll be honest. If you ask me 5 questions about the game on Saturday, I'm not even sure I can answer them.
They're not going to be about the game on Saturday, and that's probably for the best.
Yeah, I never want to talk about that again.
We're keeping on the Blockbusters theme. The first question is S, and S is for Sergio. Sergio Aguero, who scored his 10th hat-trick in Premier League history, moving him up to second on the list behind Alan Shearer. Who is in third place on the list with 9 Premier League hat-tricks to their name? You know, don't you?
Robbie Fowler?
It is Robbie Fowler.
It's like the only time I've ever watched Sky Sports News today. And
oh,
I'm
you're
there.
Joking. Well, sorry, in that case, you may well get your second question right as well. H is for hat-trick. Which Leeds United player scored the first hat-trick in Premier League history?
Oh, now you're testing
me.
We're
not listening at that point.
No, I didn't see that.
Glad you turned
it on. I literally turned it on for 10 minutes. I will go for Brian Dean.
Brian Dean is incorrect. The answer is Eric Cantona in a 5-0 victory over Tottenham Hotspur on the 25th of August 1992. Saw Brian Dean in the supermarket the other day.
Yes.
And I took a picture of him covertly and sent it to you in the... hope that you might be able to guess who it was, and unbelievably you managed to get it right.
You were absolutely fuming.
I was astounded, yeah. Anyway, T is for tall. Peter Crouch made his Burnley debut on Saturday and fouled Jack Stevens to win a completely unjust penalty in the last minute and earn his side a hugely undeserved point. But can you tell me which team he scored more goals for in his career, Liverpool or Portsmouth? So this is your 50-50.
Yeah. Do you know if it's league goals?
I do not. I can check that though. Hang on.
Because he seemed to score a lot of like Champions League goals and stuff for Liverpool, didn't he? So,
I think it will be total goals.
I will go with Liverpool.
I'm just going to check before, okay. Just in case that influences your decision. It's just total goals. Right. Senior club goals.
Okay. I'll go with Liverpool.
The answer is Portsmouth, I'm afraid.
Bloody hell. Yeah,
he scored 29 for Portsmouth and 22 for Liverpool. It is indeed. Q is for quirk. What quirk did all of the tables in the top 5 divisions in English football have prior to this weekend's fixtures? It's one of these questions where you either know it or you don't know it. So I'll read it again. Q is for quirk. What quirk did all of the tables in the top 5 divisions in English football have prior to this weekend's fixtures?
Is it?
You do know it.
They all had a team top beginning with L.
It is, indeed. Yeah, it is. Yeah, they were all topped by teams that begun with the letter L. So that was Liverpool, Leeds, Luton, Lincoln and Leyton Orient.
Nice.
M is for midfielder. And this is your last question. We've absolutely rifled through these, haven't we?
Easy for you to say.
Not really. M is for midfielder. Which midfielder joined Chelsea for free in July 2006, went on to win the Premier League, the League Cup, the Community Shield, before departing again for free in June 2010. So M is for midfielder. Which midfielder joined Chelsea for free in July 2006, went on to win the Premier League, the League Cup and the Community Shield before departing again for free in June 2010?
I'm going to go with, although I think it's probably too late, Claude Makélélé?
It's not, it's Michael Ballack. And that was why I said that he'd come in and left for free, because it was quite a big thing to get him on a free, and then by the time he left, he was pretty old, and I think he only played for another couple of years, but a solid performance there.
Yeah, I'll take two in the circumstances.
Given
I'll
the circumstances, two's very good.
Thank you very much for sticking with us. It's been a slog.
It's been a struggle, and we totally understand that you will have understood that from the tone of our voices, the general pitch of the podcast this week. But we'll be back next week with renewed vigour and energy. Mitch will be celebrating Aston Villa getting even closer to the playoffs, and I will be scratching my head as to why Southampton were unable to hold on to a lead yet again. In the meantime, have a fantastic week, and we look forward to speaking to you then.
Bye. Welcome back to the final part of this week's Sweep podcast, and before we get to the quiz, let me tell you how you can get in touch with us. You can get on Twitter at the Sweep Pod, Instagram and Facebook, search the Sweep Podcast, and email us at thesweeppodcast@gmail.com. And while we are at it, get us all over the place with the fucking hell, what was that?